for the week of November 17th to 24th. And bear with me, because it is cold and flu season, so I am a bit stuffed up, but it begins now. This Thursday, November 21st, come join the CJLO crew at the Hive Cafe for Stitch and Bitch. A Stitch and Bitch is a group of people hanging out, discussing spicy topics while knitting and doing anything crafty. And if you've ever wanted to learn how to knit, we'll show you. We'll be using the supplies from our lovely folks at the Loyal Art Hive Cafe. And come join us this Thursday in room 408 from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Loyola campus. Don't forget, it's totally free, and if you don't know how to knit, don't worry, this is the time to learn. Once again, it's Thursday in room 408 from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Loyola campus. The holiday season is upon us, folks, and that means some great Montreal traditions are starting to reemerge. This week, Santa is coming to town for his annual downtown parade. Their website says, young and old are invited to gather on Boulevard René Lévesque between Rue Dufort and Rue Saint-Urbain to experience the excitement of the most popular Christmas event in Quebec, the Santa Claus Parade. This is a wonderful annual celebration that is an enchanting kickoff to the holiday season in downtown Montreal. The parade is on Saturday the 23rd and is going to be starting at 12 p.m., so make sure to come early and grab a good spot. Once again, that is Saturday the 23rd at 12 p.m. downtown. Finally, I have a concert for y'all. This Friday at Bar Le Ritz, come see Sedani, Tremaine, Charles Noir, and Marky Lavender kicking off at 10 p.m. Not too much is going on in the world of shows this week, but this one had a big lineup and it looked cool. Tickets are only being sold at the door, so make sure to go early. Once again, that's this Friday at 10 p.m. at 179 Jean Talon West. And there you have it, guys, a quick community calendar for the week of November 17th to 24th, here with Danny Gold on CGLO 1690 AM. And now back to your regular scheduled programming.
Turning into you. All right. Welcome back to the Go-Go Radio Magic Show right here at CJLO 1690 AM. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was Kelly Stoltz with Turning Into You from his excellent new album, My Regime. And we are so thrilled to have Kelly on the line right now. Kelly, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Thanks so much for joining us this evening, or I suppose this afternoon for you. How is it in San Francisco today?
Well, I'm just back in the house after running some errands. I got caught in a little rain on my bike. And, we've been in the middle of gray and rainy skies here for the last week. But, sun in the future. So.
Well, that's good. We're getting reacquainted with gray and cold skies as well.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good song, getting reacquainted with gray. That one before this interview's over. That's a good title.
Hey, you can write down any notes you want to make for any future songs.
Good. I will be sure to cut you in on the 3% in there for sure.
I was hoping we can start off this conversation with just hearing a little bit about your upbringing, because it's probably the one aspect of your life that I don't know much about. What was it like growing up in Michigan, and what sort of gave you the music bug?
I moved a few places when I was a kid. Parents divorced and we moved one place to the next, and I ended up in Michigan in Birmingham, which is a kind of a well-to-do suburb of Detroit, and it's where my mom had grown up, so that's where I was from, maybe 1980 on. And I was always kind of interested in music. My dad played piano a bit, and, I had aunts and uncles who played folk songs, at Christmas or whatever, but it wasn't, not a huge musical family exposure all the time. But I remember signing up for, Columbia Record Club, and you would send away a penny and get 12 albums in the mail. And I listened to a lot of radio, and later on, maybe when I was about 13, my mom remarried, and an older stepbrother was very cool to me. He had bleach blonde hair and played synthesizer in a new wave band, and dressed cool, and was just very different than anybody kind of that I had ever seen. And so when he moved away, he left me in care of some of his records, which was Depeche Mode, New Order, David Bowie, Bauhaus, Echo and the Bunnymen, kind of stuff with, he was into British, new wave, I guess it was. So I just thought he was really cool. So whatever he was listening to, I wanted to investigate. So I just, just got into that. And before you know it, I had spiky hair and a trench coat and wanted to be in bands and stuff. And so I did a little bit of that, a very little compared to other people. For me, it was mostly the fantasy in the bedroom with the radio cranked up and a tennis racket and, watching myself in a mirror and doing that until an unhealthy age. By the time people started bands at 16 or 17 or 18 or 19 or even had records out, I was still, kind of squirreled away. And I think some part of that was, I kind of felt like musicians like David Bowie were from another planet. And I was just from Michigan, and what did I really have to say? So it took a while, but I guess that was kind of where I got the bug, was just an older stepbrother who was into music that was different to what I heard on the radio, and the people looked different, and the cover art on the records looked like something I wanted to understand, and I didn't know what it was,
Have you given that stepbrother a little tip of the hat as far as to play with Echo and the Bunnymen? Does he take credit for that?
Mentioned him in every interview, years later, when I was playing with, I ended up playing in Echo and the Bunnymen, and he came to one of the gigs, and, he had tears in his eyes. He was very proud in a way, and I think he knew that he'd had an effect on the direction of my life, which he says much to the chagrin of my mom. Right. Definitely was an early influence in looking cool and listening to good stuff.
Now, from Michigan, you ended up moving, you know, in your early 20s to New York, and you actually worked for a management company. Was there any sort of industry wisdom that you gleaned at this point as you were starting to make your own way?
Well, I moved to New York, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I mean, I had a vague desire still that I was a good singer and kind of a class clown and entertainer. So I enjoyed entertaining people. So I knew that was part of my, you know, genetic makeup predisposition, but I still wasn't writing very good songs. I mean, the songs I wrote were pretty lousy. And so I was kind of reluctant to share those with people. So I got working for Jeff Buckley and for his management company in New York. I would see Jeff play when I lived in New York early on, solo and smaller shows, and thought, wow, this guy's great. That's kind of what I want to do someday, is be able to sing and write these cool songs that he was doing. So I kind of got working for the music for his management company, and I guess that was valuable to me, because I learned that I don't want to be in the music business. I want to actually be doing the writing, the songs. And you know, by then I was 24 and it was like, okay, it's time to, you know, borrow a four track and start actually working on this a lot every day, as like, that's what I want to do, you know. So I learned from that job that, yeah, I didn't want to be just in the music business, because when you're working for a management company, the product you're working is a musician and songs and art and all that, but it's not the same as making the art. So I learned then that, yeah, I wanted to get writing my own songs and be the person on stage rather than the person collecting the fan mail.
Right, and then from New York, you made the move to San Francisco, which we can't.
Yeah,
it's hard to imagine you not having moved there, because you've become synonymous with the city, and so that the scene that you then became a part of. What drew you to San Francisco? Like, what led you to that decision?
I guess, you know, I left New York, and I really got, you know, I loved living there. I was born there and lived there for the first few years of my life, so going back was nice. But, you know, at 23 with little direction, it's a very tough place to be. And, you know, living on a credit card and not really sure what I was going to do for money, it was like, okay, I'm going to get out of here. So I went back to Michigan, actually, for about 6 months, and started playing music with a friend of mine, Gus, and he was a drummer, and we were both sort of like, I don't want to be in Michigan anymore. I think it was January of, what year was that, 95, 96, something like that, and we both worked at a small music club there, and I remember we would go in when the club was empty on Sunday nights and bring our instruments and have, like, jams on the stage, and that was became like a little rehearsal place for us. And we both were like, let's get out of here, man. We're living in a refrigerator, and we don't need to be here. Let's go somewhere warm, you know. So we took a cross-country trip, and I had my guitar and he had his drum set, and we just kind of ended up on the West Coast, and we tried LA, and that was too much driving, and we tried Santa Cruz, California, and it was like, eh, it's okay, it's a little small. And we sort of ended up in San Francisco after 3 weeks of traveling, and it was sort of like the money was running out. It was like, okay, this place looks cool, and we might have enough for a month's rent deposit, you know, if we stop now. If we keep going to Seattle or Vancouver or Portland, we're not going to have the cash. So it was just serendipitous luck that we sort of made a financial decision and landed here at the same time. And so that was, yeah, it was pretty much one of the few real smart decisions I made in my life, was moving here. So,
well, one of the, like, as an outsider, having read about that time in the city and sort of the music that came up from it, from you guys and the Fresh and Onlys and, you know, like countless other bands, to what the city has turned into now with gentrification. Can you let us in a little bit on what that was like living in the city with so much music around you?
Yeah, I mean, I think like any music scene that's going anywhere in the country or in Canada right now, it's just there's a lot of people doing stuff and are really dedicated to their art and spending a lot of time on it and working as little as possible on outside jobs so that the majority of their time they can focus on being creative. At least that's how I worked and how a few of my friends in San Francisco worked. And, you know, like anywhere you go see your friend's show, they come see you, you borrow a bass because yours is broken for a gig, or you, you know, book a tour together, or you learn, you know, tricks, recording tricks from people, stuff like that, just sharing information. And you're all kind of in the same generation learning together and trying to inspire each other. And there's also a creative competition a little bit, you know, somebody's on a better tour than you are, and they're drawing more people in Berlin. And hey, we gotta, why is that? You know, I need to write a better song so that that happens for me. And just being inspired by people's music that you know was like a new thing. It was, everybody was always these faraway, strange people from other planets making music. And then it's like, oh, my good friend made this incredible record, you know? So I think it was mainly a lot of inspiration for each other and a lot of healthy competition, and just like any other kind of arts movement for any time, or there for a brief time, there was that thing where we were all sort of growing at the same time and interested in a similar sound and aesthetic.
Now, you also, your home recording process, I suppose, which was revealed through a video that you, I think, put out called Please to Meet Me on your website years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you go over your process in that video, and to let the listeners in at home who aren't aware, generally you work on your albums from home in your own studio from a Tascam machine over a year to a year and a half period generally. And you had in the video had said that it's more of a document, or the songs are a document of how you might feel a given day. So your mm-hmm. your albums have a nice variety of sort of mm-hmm. like textures and emotions, let's say. Mm-hmm. Is this still the process that you're using today on the newer albums, like My Regime and Keora?
Pretty much all of my records, aside from a few people popping in here and there, I play all the instruments, and I generally sit down at the piano or with a guitar or with a drum beat, and a melody will spring to mind from some chords, or, you know, I'll see a sentence in the news, or hear someone say getting reacquainted with Gray, and I think, oh, that's interesting, and then I'll just play that and on a guitar or piano, and then add drums to it, and then add bass, and then add some synthesizers and some tambourines. And, you know, if I start at noon, by like 7 or 8 at night, I generally have most of the song kind of done, and I just repeat that process for 6, 7, 8 months and cobble together what I think are like the 10 or 15 best songs from that time period. And that's kind of what ends up being the record, things that fit together either thematically or sound wise. And generally, you know, like most records, it is, there's a cohesiveness because they do come from a certain period in your writing in time. So they kind of do sound similar that way. But yeah, a lot of that is just born out of sort of that childhood alone in a room thing. And I learned to play drums and learned to play bass and learned to play piano kind of by necessity, because I was not sure that, are these songs good, you know? And so rather than play something for somebody, you know, there's nothing more terrifying to me than sitting on a couch and like playing a song to my mom or some friend or being at a family function, like play us one of your songs. You know, it is a very private kind of thing for me. I've just learned to play all the instruments just as a way to, maintain creative control, but also kind of hide away and not have to have somebody go, "Ooh, that's pretty, that lyric is terrible." You know? So that's kind of what I learned to do. And every time I make a record, I think this is the one. I'm comfortable enough and confident enough now with my writing. It's like, this is the one I'm going to go to a proper studio. I'm going to have people in, and then I get an idea, and the next thing you know, it's done. And there's another idea, and that's being worked on. So I do what I guess some people would say are like demos, you know, but those demos contain a lot of happy accidents and non-traditional songwriting things that land on the album. And I really like those things more than just kind of a perfect rendition of a song, you know, done in a proper studio setting.
Well, I'm curious, when you work with other bands, like earlier in the evening, we heard a track by The Dates, which is an album I believe you produced this year. The track was called California Under the Ocean, I think it was called. Is that right?
Yeah, Garrett.
Under the Sea?
Yes.
So when you're when you're acting as producer or engineer for other bands, are you taking that Tascam process with you to these recordings, or in that situation, are you working under different, you know?
It's just kind of up to whoever it is. I mean, I've done a few singer-songwriters. That Dates record is my friend Garrett Goddard, who's played in a lot of bands around here and is down in L.A. most of the time now, playing music with The Intelligence and Lars Finberg.
Dirty Ghosts, I think, was another album this year.
Yeah, it's just kind of whatever they want to do. But if it's bands, you know, they generally come in and I set up mics on the drums and the bass and the guitar, and they just do it live. Generally, I have a studio now. Very fortunate to have that in my house. That's not crammed in my bedroom like it used to be. I've got a place now with a garage that's been finished out to work as a studio. So, you know, it's got wood floors and some milk cartons on the wall, or whatever those egg cartons, and, you know, some kind of low-tech sound reinforcement. And so I set up bands in there and do stuff. And sometimes they just want me more as an engineer, as somebody they trust to set up mics in a way that sound good. And other times they want me to play or to offer more ideas, you know, in kind of an engineer and producer way. But, you know, each artist is different, and I just kind of let them dictate how much they hear from me or don't hear from me, you know?
I have to say, I listened
whatever
to
their process is, yeah.
I listened to the Spiral Stairs album that you produced recently, I think it's called Hypnotized, or Are You Hypnotized?
Yes.
And I have to say, I felt a little bit of a Kelly Stoltz stamp on that one, in a very good way, yeah.
Scott and I are good friends now, and I've known him for a long time. And, you know, I grew up liking Pavement. I mean, I remember when Crooked Rain came out, I was living in New York, and that was kind of the record that was on my headphones a lot when I was wandering around and in the subway and stuff. So getting to know him over the years has been a real treat, you know, and, he's a sweetheart, and, I think these last two records, I feel like are his best solo records he's done. And, you know, maybe it's some coincidence, but those were the ones I worked on. And definitely he was open to letting me kind of go with ideas and would follow my direction a little bit on, you know, four or five songs on each record that I played on. And, you know, he would say, it's getting a little new wave. I'm kind of trying to make my Van Morrison album. So we would just sort of meet in the middle, you know?
Right. I was hearing some...
I'm really proud of those last two records he's done.
I was hearing a little Chuck Prophet in his new recordings as well. I don't know if it's the delivery or the feel.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your new album, My Regime. I noticed that it was mastered by Mikey Young, who is someone who I would say in the last couple of years has like come into my radar through Total Control and Lace Curtain, Green Child. How did you meet
Eddie
Mikey?
Eddie Current, yeah, Suppression Rain.
Absolutely.
Yeah, many. Yeah.
How did you guys meet up?
I've known, you mentioned Chuck Prophet, and I played a show with Chuck in about 2001, and we were co-billed together at this bar, and Chuck just played and played and played for hours, and everybody left after he played because it was like 1 a.m. on a Thursday night, and all of the people who come to see me, there was maybe three or four people left, and I was like, I hate this Chuck Prophet guy, whoever he is, man, what an ass, you know? And so he stuck around and watched me play and was like, you guys are amazing. Do you have any records? And at that time, I had just released Antique Glow, which was a homemade record I made, and I hand-painted the record sleeves, you know, every, what it was, 300 records, I think, and I hand painted all the covers from old stuff I would get at secondhand or thrift stores. You know, I would just paint over an old Sinatra and give him, you know, antennas or something on his head. Or so Chuck got one of those records, and the next day he called me. He was like, "I've listened to this record three times today. Is there anything I can do to help you? You know, I just think you're really talented." And at that point, I thought, well, I don't have any CDs of this record. Do you know anybody who makes CDs? And he's like, I know a guy in Australia, so let me make a call. So he makes a call to Australia. This guy, Nick, in Melbourne, ran Corduroy Records, and he liked my record. And they pressed up 500 CDs for me for free, and that was a very nice gesture. And one of the guys working at the pressing plant was Mike Young. So I got to know Mikey that way, and Mikey was like, this record's totally awesome. We should bring Kelly down here to tour. And so the next thing I knew, I was in Australia in 2002 and doing a tour, and Mikey was my guitar player, and Mark, who was another guy who worked at the record pressing plant, played bass, and we got a couple different people in on drums. And so I've known Mikey a long time, and whenever I go tour in Australia, he plays guitar for me, and he comes to visit and stays here. We're really good friends, and he went to Europe with me on a tour and played guitar, so we stay in frequent touch, and he's just really a nice guy and knowledgeable about mixing and mastering, and just a great musician too.
Yeah, I mean, the album sounds fantastic, but it's sort of a running theme through your catalog. I think all your albums just sound excellent.
Cool. Well, thank you. I mean, I'm getting better and better at it. You know, it's like I engineer and I set up the mics every day for myself. So you learn, and it's been 20 years of figuring out, well, kick drum sounds better if the mic's here than it does there. And so, you know, I think they've all improved. But sound-wise, because I'm kind of getting better at that, too.
It seems that around Triangle Time, up until your current release, you kind of had a shift in sound or attitude. Was there something behind that?
I don't know. I mean, as I say, I think it goes back to that record collection that turned me on to music in the first place. And in some way, a lot of the Sub Pop era records I make, I had just kind of learned to be able to play enough piano to write songs, so I was sort of inspired by writing on piano, and I've kind of come back to guitar, and if I go on to a guitar, you know, it generally, it's Echo and the Bunnymen, and you know, music, Joy Division, Bauhaus, Peter Murphy, things like that that I grew up on. And I think that that's why I'm kind of regressing to that formative years with my newest records. And I think it's just kind of maybe more naturally what I am. And in the early days, I was trying to write more Beatle-y stuff, like because I was just really inspired by all that. I'd kind of missed a lot of classic rock in my youth and gone straight to new wave and punk rock music. And so trying to recreate a Beatles or a Beach Boys sound was like a new challenge to me. And I thought I could do a Bunny Man type of song, but that's too easy. I need to try and sound like, I want to do more of a Harry Nilsson orchestral big statement. And so as I've gotten older, I've thought like, well, this is actually what's deep in my DNA. So I should just let some of it out.
Well, I had only brought up the sort of shift in sound because what's apparent on My Regime is a bit of a step back as far as the, you know, sort of like exploration towards, I'm going to say disco or the post-punk or the, you know, the heavy bass vibes that you have on the last couple of albums. Mm-hmm. It's still there, but this album seems to be a little bit more personal or grounded. Is that fair to say? To me, it feels like you're revealing a little bit more emotionally than the last couple of albums.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true. Yeah, I think that, you know, it was I had a tough year, and I got engaged, which was wonderful. A few months later, my dad passed away, and a couple months after that, I left. I was playing with Echo and the Bunnymen for 2 or 3 years as a rhythm guitar player, and that came to an end just because it was getting kind of crazy to fly over there on a Friday night, play a show, and fly back on Sunday morning. You know, it was a long way to go for me and financially for them. But so I think by the time, you know, I was writing a lot of these songs, there was kind of a melancholic look about, you know, you just wake up one morning and go, God, I feel old, you know?
Right.
It's like I've gotten older, and you know, I guess you just start thinking about things and you feel a little more at ease revealing more about yourself and less worried about what anybody cares, you know?
Well, sorry, you also released the Falcon Falkland album. Was it Energy Beats? What's the title of that album?
Perfection.
Perfection, that's right. Now, I'm assuming this is a collection of songs that you made with your buddy Garth Steele Clipper.
Bring Garth, yes.
A while ago? Are these older songs that you've, or an older recording?
Garth was another musician who I played quite a bit with in San Francisco. I played with gigs with him and Sonny Smith of Sonny and the Sunsets. I mean, we must have played 25 shows together and from 2000 to 2005, and we were all very close friends and songwriting buddies. And so Garth and I would always make up sort of goofy songs, and we both have, I guess, a dry sense of humor, or what we think we have a good sense of humor. It's like up to the listeners to figure that out. But we are kind of like a Lennon. It's like Lennon and Weird Al. You know, I mean, we can just anticipate where we're going to go with the song and write sort of funny songs in 5 or 10 minutes. So we started doing that in 2002, and he moved to Portland around 2008. And so when he would come in to visit San Francisco for 3 or 4 days, he'd always make time and we'd spend an afternoon and write another song. And so our theory was these were two sort of disgraced, real building songwriting team type songwriters who never had any hits and tried to write in every genre chasing, you know, some kind of hit and failed in all of them. So all genres are explored on that record. We do gospel music, we do country, we play kind of punk metal and funk music and folk music, but it's all humorous.
Well, you know, the ad that you guys put
up. Sounds like I'm sorry, but I don't like cats.
Right, or I live in my sweatpants.
Done in a very sort of Bert Jansch, Nick Drake folk way, and it's a very plaintive ballad, but I'm sorry, but I don't like cats. You know, it's a song to maybe a romantic partner and just explaining that you just don't like cats. So, you know, we think it's funny and we laugh and it's just a wonderful way to spend an afternoon. And And listening back to those songs after all these years, it was like, these are good. We should just put this out, and maybe no one will buy it, or someone will, buy it on a tour or something, and just get a glimpse into another side of myself, because I do like to make people laugh. I think I'm more naturally inclined to be a comedian than I am a musician. So it's important to show the balance of my, of my mind. And there's the songwriter side, and then there's kind of the comedic songwriter side.
Yeah, and we were privy to that with the Willie Weird album that
right,
released a couple of years ago. So do you see yourself releasing more of these non-Kelly Stoltz albums?
Garth and I just started writing another song the other day over the phone together, and we'll do a demo here in my studio and send him the song, and he'll overdub stuff. So we're getting back to that, and anytime he visits, what a better way to spend an afternoon than making music with your friend and laughing. So we'll definitely do that. And I've been of two minds of the Willie Weird thing lately. It's just, I have been recording kind of a sort of a punky album. I mean, at least for me, it's very basic Ramones chords and drums. And I've been kind of working on an album like that, and I don't know where that fits in. Is this me, or is this my nom de plume? I don't know. So I'm trying to figure that out. I mean, the quote about you learn the truth about someone when they're wearing a mask or whatever, that there's some quote of Oscar Wilde, or I don't know, but that's very true. I can reveal more about my true self when I'm sometimes playing a character. And, but I'm also feeling like, do I need to play a character anymore? It is me.
Right.
Who made this? Me. So maybe I'll just put my own name on it. I don't know.
For the new album, My Regime, is there going to be any touring in your future?
There's some tour dates in February. Unfortunately, it's mostly, I don't know that we'll get out as far as Montreal, but it's mostly Seattle, Portland, LA, San Francisco, down to parts of Texas and Colorado and stuff. I'm doing a tour with Ezra Furman.
Oh, nice.
In February. So that's it. Who knows next year? I just don't know.
Well, I feel if you're going to visit,
as I should, unfortunately, but if you got anybody's listening and wants us to play in Montreal, send me an email.
Let's make it warm weather though, so that you feel at home.
No
here.
Problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kelly, I can't thank you enough for speaking to us tonight. It really was an honor and a privilege. And I just wanted to quickly say that way Paul and I discovered you, you were opening for the Dirt Bombs. And we, at that point in our concert-going days, rarely would show up for the opening act. And that night we did. And I think we've probably shown up to most shows we see since then. It was just an incredible evening. And to be honest, it's been a love affair ever since. So thank you very much for all the music.
Thank you. That's great.
We really appreciate it.
I remember that show. That was a fun. I had a lot of fun in Montreal that night. I remember that.
Well, I don't know if you guys did it every night on the tour, but there was a deconstruction of the drum kit off the stage into like the main floor. And then both bands just came out and...
I think we were doing Miss You by the Rolling Stones, I think, or at least attempting to get okay. through a few bars, and then it would turn into a mess. Yeah, I remember that.
What a fantastic evening.
I was playing saxophone.
I think you were too, yeah. And your drummer looked like he was the happiest person in the world. I'm not sure your drummer was at that point, but...
He was the happiest. He was very happy at that time. Still is.
All right, Kelly, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, and, thank you, Ian, and I appreciate you playing my music.
Well, we wouldn't have it any other way. Do you have anything that you want to add to the folks at home, a website or anything to direct them to?
Yeah, I mean, if you're interested, you can learn a very small bit of information from my website, which is Kelly Stoltz, KelleyStoltz.com, and there's tour dates and you know, places to buy records or merchandise and a little bit of news here and there. So like other things, it's a DIY thing. So my web skills are lagging far behind my recording skills, but there is some information there.
Awesome. Well, here's to you having a good 2020.
Thanks, buddy. Okay, appreciate it.
Ciao. All right, folks, we're back. That was Kelly Stoltz, kind enough to speak to us very generously. I didn't even check the time until now. We are eternally grateful for that. Should we get right back into another Kelly Stoltz track?
Definitely.
All right, let's play. What are we going to play? Looking for a Spark. This is from K-Aura. And then after that, we'll hear the Spiral Stairs track Hypnotize that we were talking about in our conversation. You're tuned into the Go-Go Radio Magic Show right here at CJLO 1690 AM. We'll be right back.
dumpling. There's something wrong with you.
Hey, this is the K-Man. Tune into CJLO.com on Friday nights from 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. for Beyond That Graveyard 3. And start your weekend the right way, always. You love it, you need it. Beyond That Graveyard Part 3 on CJLO.com.
Bellevue, that's it. I mean, sometimes you just ain't all there.
Founded in 2002, the Concordia Community Solidarity Co-op Bookstore is pleased to offer a not-for-profit alternative to corporate bookstores in Montreal. We are conveniently located right on Concordia's downtown campus at 2150 Bishop Street, opposite the Montreal Museum of Fine Arts. Offering both new and used books, in addition to a wide variety of artisan items, we also boast the largest selection of sex and gender studies titles anywhere in Montreal. Come check us out to learn more. Are you interested in comics? Wonder where all the movies come from? Already a fan of the genre but want to dig deeper? Vibrerie Crossover Comics is here to help. From the most popular Marvel and DC comics to independent gems, we want to show off the variety that's available to you. Gaming and community are also important to us, with Magic the Gathering, Dungeons & Dragons, and book club events happening regularly. Plus, we're open 7 days a week, located near Metro Lionel Gru at 3560 Notre Dame West. Stop by for a visit or check crossovercomics.ca for more info.
All right, welcome back to the Go-Go Radio Magic Show right here at CJLO 1690 AM. And that last track we heard, folks, was Villiers Terrace from Echo and the Bunnymen, and that was from their Crocodiles album, which I don't think we mentioned in the interview, but Kelly Stoltz's second album was a self-recorded track-by-track cover of that album, Crocodiles by Echo and the Bunnymen. Played every instrument himself by memory. And before that, we heard Hypnotized by Spiral Stairs, and that's a release from 2019 that Kelly had produced. And then starting off that set was Looking for a Spark, and that was from the K-Aura album, which was 2017, and that was the album that Castle Face had put out. Now, we only have a couple more minutes until the time break here at 8 o'clock. So thank you very much for tuning in. Once again, thanks so much to Kelly Stoltz for talking to us. It was an absolute thrill. And we're going to close out with a couple more of his songs. We're at the very least going to hear Our Modern World, Your Face, and I think we're going to close out with Keeping the Flame. We'll do it again next week, folks.
Bye.
Just fade into the crowd. Of the sound.